All right, cool. All right, welcome to the first episode of Pour for the Course. My name is Matt from Marysville, Ohio. We got three other guys here, Tommy, Matt, and Dave. We're going to go around and do just a little bit of an introduction. Two questions for the group. How many bottles of bourbon do you currently own, and what is your current handicap situation? So, Tommy, let's start with you.
Oh, man. Tommy. Live here in Hilliard. You put me on the spot with the bottles of bourbon. The handicap's much easier. It's a 1.6. Bottles of bourbon, I would guess somewhere in the neighborhood of 40 would be my guess.
How many are open?
Probably about half.
That's surprising because your display is doesn't lead to showing you everything.
It does not.
It's a very small display.
It is.
He's a humble collector.
Yeah.
I am. I'm a quality over quantity kind
of guy. He must have a lot of good stuff hidden is what I'm taking away from that.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's all in there. Check it out anytime.
Nice. David. Lambert.
Yeah, so let's see. David Lambert, live in downtown Columbus, Ohio, soon to live in Marysville, Ohio. I think I have about 20 bottles, maybe 25. So I'm definitely the lowest on the totem pole here. I'd say about, I don't know, 9 of them or 10 of them are open. And
your handicap's probably about the same
12.
Too, right? Like a 9 or 10?
12, yeah. No, like 12. 12 handicap. I think I'm about 12.
Split hairs.
Okay, yeah. All
right. Right around there.
You'll be an 8 by September next year. Easy.
Yeah. Totally. Like a 12. Yeah, right around 12. I'll probably be next September. So maybe 11.
Sweet.
Matt Farr, go ahead and drop the hammer on us with your bourbon collection.
Last but not least, let me tell you a little bit about myself. I'm over in Westerville, and I think I'm sitting at a collection of about 75. I've got the same number open, 10, 8 to 10. Unfortunately, the handicap's not 8 to 10. It's a bit north of that. I think I'm at a cool 22.5 right now on the Gin app.
All right.
Gin app.
What were you at the beginning of the year?
22.3.
Okay, good, good. All right. All right. Hey, you know what? Consistency.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. But a room for improvement. I'll for sure be at a 12 by the time we're same spot next year.
So. I like the confidence. I forgot to answer my own two questions. So, Matt Milholland here, live in Marysville, Ohio. Been there for about 5 years now. And I currently carry a handicap of plus 1.8. If we're playing a game against one another, I am officially a 0. So you're not getting me to give shots.
So I should get 3 strokes from you every round. That feels great.
It should be known that I've never beat Tommy when giving him 3 shots in a round. So take that for what it is. But I think I've got about 50 bottles of bourbon right now. And I can be accused as the collector instead of drinker because I think the bottom tier of my bottles are all open, maybe 10 or 11. And all the good ones are still sealed. So maybe we can open up some of those as we move throughout the podcast. So
this is a bourbon podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to have plenty to review.
It doesn't have to just be bourbon, right? It can be whiskeys.
Absolutely.
We can talk fun stuff.
Yeah. So today our golf course review is Columbus Country Club. It's located on the southeast side of Columbus in Bexley, Ohio. And the four of us had the chance to play Columbus Country Club a few weeks ago, where we were all on pace to lose money to Dave due to his 12 handicap situation. And we're going to just talk about the golf course today, some of the history, some of the redesign, and some of our, I guess, takeaways from the round together. So we're not architect nerds, so please don't assault us for not recognizing fantastic architecture at times. But Tommy, do you want to take it away for some of the research?
Sure. I don't know. I'm a bit of a historian in some degrees, not all history, but golf courses, golf, bourbon, distilleries. I try to understand a little bit of what's been going on. So I did a little bit of research into Columbus Country Club. It's actually one of the oldest golf courses, if not the oldest golf course in Central Ohio. The grounds were first developed by Orlando Miller in 1903. Actually, as a horseman's club, not a golf course, but the golf course soon followed. The original nine was designed by Tom Bendelow, 1907. Tom Bendelow of famed courses such as East Lake, Medina, Olympia Fields, among others.
Heard of them.
So, you know, not a bad roster of tracks, yeah. But
is that good? Are those courses good?
I haven't had the chance to play any of them, but I've seen some of them on TV. They seem to be
I
nice.
Have a course on you that you've
Which
never been
Which one have
at?
You played?
Medina?
Oh, no.
Wow.
Have not been to Medina.
Dave, you probably play the most rounds out of all of us. Would you say that you've played those courses?
Yeah, I've played all of those, for sure.
what's your favorite, man?
I'd have to say Columbus Country Club.
Yeah, good call.
Out of all
good
of
call.
Those.
Good call. Yeah. Remember.
Well, you know, as part of the design, it
Remember
also it also saw you know other famed architects such as H.S. Colt. You may know him from such a golf course as Pine Valley. Dick Wilson, who did Bay Hill, and Jeffrey Cornish, who did Olympia Hills. They also lent a hand in originally designing the course. But probably the most influential course designer for Columbus Country Club was Donald Ross. He renovated the original nine and also added the back nine in 1914. And then he remodeled the course and lengthened it in 1920. So lots of Donald Ross influence there. And then it was actually renovated by Kevin Hargrave in 2018. His focus was really on the original Ross design. So in an attempt to get it back to kind of what it originally was. More than 2,000 trees were removed. Bunkers replaced to reflect Ross's original works. New and repositioned tee complexes, cleanup of approaches and green surrounds, et cetera, ultimately to try and replicate the original Ross design. But what they found out was there was a clubhouse fire in the 60s, which destroyed the documentation of the original Ross layout. So a true restoration to the original Ross design was not in the cards. So what they really focused on was instilling the Ross style and feel through bunkering, strategy, scaling of the golf course. And I read an interview that Kevin Hargrave did, and he said that as part of this redesign, he was working up in the Northeast, and he visited a golf course called Wittensville Golf Club, which is in Northbridge, Massachusetts. It's a nine-hole golf course that Donald Ross designed in 1923, and he said that many consider that to be kind of his most untouched work. So he leveraged that experience walking around the grounds to really just try and get a feel for, Ross elements, and to really inspire kind of the work that they were doing at Columbus Country Club.
And what was the...
Just a comment on the trees. I think if they removed 2,000 far, and I probably removed another 1,000 or so, at least.
Specifically with tee shots, you could say.
Specifically with tee shots, yeah.
Not a late at night, chainsaw experience going on.
No, that's later.
Okay.
But we'll when we play tomorrow, I'll try to remove a few more. We'll see what happens.
All right.
And Columbus Country Club has had some big time events.
Yep,
throughout
I was getting
the years,
there.
Right?
Yeah. Yep.
Sorry, not to jump
You're
the ship
good.
There, but
no. Yeah, I mean, it hosted two PGA Tour events, the Columbus Invitational, which was the name, one in 1946, one in 1947. The first was won by Byron Nelson, the second by Bobby Locke.
Never heard of him?
Pretty decent good. Names. But, probably the most famous event was the 1964 PGA Championship. So it has hosted a major. That event was ultimately won by Bobby Nichols, who won by three shots over a one Jack Nicklaus and a one Arnold Palmer. There was also a one Ben Hogan, who finished tied ninth at the age of 51 in that event.
Dang.
Anyone care to guess what Bobby Nichols was awarded for winning that 1964 PGA Championship?
Isn't it on the chalkboard?
In Doll Hairs. That is
when you first walk in.
Yep.
If I could only remember that awesome chalkboard.
Yeah. I remember Googling it and being shocked, so I'm not even going to try to guess, but it's like $1,000, I feel like.
It's more than 1,000.
Okay.
But it's not much more than 1,000. Okay. It's much closer to 1,000 than the purses today.
Okay. All right. No Tiger yet.
He won a smooth $18,000 for winning the 1964 PGA Championship.
Dave makes that
what
a
was
day.
What did he shoot?
I think he was about 9 under.
I was gonna guess 9.
I think that's what it was.
That was just a shot.
I did not write that down, okay. But I think that's about what it was.
And Dave or Tommy, do we have any idea what this most recent renovation costs?
It was in the neighborhood of $2.5 million. I think.
Okay. All right.
Slightly more than $18,000.
Slightly more than $18,000.
Yeah.
I'll double check that figure.
It's fantastic. Columbus has some sneaky good golf. Right, like there's a lot of great spots around here. When you talk about, I know this was a while ago. What did you say back in the '60s when CCC hosted the PGA?
'64. Yep.
And I think it's also major. The other major that was hosted here was over at Scioto, right? Where you
your cup. Yeah. I forget the year that Scioto Country Club. The members are going to assault me for forgetting that, but I think it was in the '20s. I've got a Bobby Jones poster in the locker room, so.
And they've done two. They've done a PGA and a U.S. Open.
U.S. Senior was in 2016.
The senior was recent, but they also did a U.S. Open a while back in like the 20s or 30s.
Yes. Yeah, 1920s. Somebody can fact check me on that. But
That was my little history look up that.
Yeah, absolutely. Columbus, sneaky good golf. Everyone is familiar with Muirfield Village with the Memorial Tournament every year, but the Columbus Country Club is such a good golf course that gets forgotten when it comes to big time events that were held. And that chalkboard when you walk really into the men's room or the men's room is so cool. I think I remember, this is completely hearsay, but I remember somebody telling me that they cleaned out a room at Columbus Country Club and found that chalkboard. And I don't know when that was, but it's the original scoreboard.
So I was gonna say, I think it's the original that they've maintained and you know, done something to, so it doesn't.
That's just even cooler. I thought it was like a replica.
Nope, I think it's the original.
Yeah. And I mean, this dude, what did you say his name was? Bobby Nichols?
Yep.
Yeah, Bobby Nichols. I mean, no one remembers him when he's taken down giants like Arnold Palmer and Jack Nicklaus and Ben Hogan. So, yeah, pretty sweet.
That's insane.
Dave, what's your – so we obviously got to play Columbus Country Club based on your relationship and membership adjacent status with Columbus Country Club. Can you talk about how we were able to get on this golf course? Because if anybody's ever going to listen to these podcasts, they're going to say, why are we reviewing this private course that no one can play?
Yeah, it's actually not not as hard as you think. They have a reciprocity with the Athletic Club of Columbus, which is downtown and much less expensive to join than Columbus Country Club. And you get several rounds that you get to play over the course of the year. I want to say it's up to like 6 or 7 now. I'm not entirely sure. I'd have to double check. It's a great little program that allows us to experience a pretty cool golf course and a pretty cool setup. And just the location and the feel of the golf course is so unique. So it's a fun to take advantage of it throughout the year. I think I've not taken full advantage of it over the last year, but I think we played 2 or 3 times this year. So will this be our third time playing it or second?
Second time this year. I think third total.
Second time this year.
But yeah, the three of us certainly like taking advantage of you and your ability to get us out there. So we thank you for that.
It's good to know you've got a few extra pops in there to take us out next summer.
I just wanna say that, you know, Matt has Urbana and Tommy has Brookside. Mr. Farr, I'm waiting for everywhere. You to join. Yeah.
I have work pay for all my
somewhere.
Membership trips.
Okay.
Gotcha. I do need to join somewhere. I just, one, probably need to improve, and then, B, need to do the biggest salesmanship of my life and convince the wife that it's a smart investment.
Well, the improvement sounds like a chicken or the egg sort of thing to me. It's, I don't know that you need to improve before you join.
Be a part
maybe
of
you need
pitch.
To join before you, to, you in order to improve.
Tell the wife. You improve.
I think
Exactly. And listen, look how good Dave has gotten based on the amount of rounds he gets at Columbus Country Club.
Absolutely.
Jeez. He's gone from a 9 to a 12.
So the scales have fallen from my eyes. I see the light. This is how we need to go about it. I do think it makes sense where for me and the desires that I have with the family and wanting to get, you know, the kids involved and something like that. Unfortunately, right now it doesn't make any sense because they can barely walk around in a straight line. So
it's also a tough time to join a private club in Columbus, Ohio area, let alone anywhere in the country at this moment. But you know, give it a little bit of time.
I think it'll happen. You know, I've already sought after your all's input for which clubs to join, and I've been given some interesting ones.
Sayota Golf Club.
Yeah. Easy.
Some pretty easy ones to get into. I mean, well, so that brings up a question. So if you lived within a reasonable distance to drive to Columbus Country Club every day, would you be a member?
Oh, yeah. For me, I would. I mean, I've...
Golf course only? Or club only, excluding...
Yeah.
Finances and...
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Finances independent.
Yep.
If I'm not thinking money and like I don't know what the wait list scenario looks like, I don't even know if they'd invite me given the current handicap. I probably should have not told my true handicap. That's going to really prohibit me from getting into the clubs that I'd love to get into.
We can edit it to a 2.7.
Sure. Yeah. Sure. But all things considered, I think the course is beautiful and I would love to have that be the home course. It's definitely one that I've considered. It's close enough for me. I mean, Brookside is close and I love that course as well. Would love to join that place, and there's a couple others that are nearby where I'm at, out in Westerville, that wouldn't be bad at all.
Is it Little Turtle up by you? Is that still private?
Yep, that's up there, and they just recently did a renovation 5-ish years ago. So,
I'm not sure if it's private though.
I think so.
Is it?
Yeah. In fact, yeah, it is because I've reached out and have. And initiated some sort of conversation.
Send in some emails.
Yeah, send in some emails.
All right. Hey, any more fun facts about Columbus Country Club, or did we exhaust most of them? You want to move into our pre-round activities?
Yeah, I mean, I that was most of the history. I've got some other general thoughts that we can touch on as we go. But the other fun fact that you brought up was the scoreboard in the grill.
Nice.
But yeah, we can jump into that.
Dave, we'll start with you since you've got member adjacent status through the athletic club, but what do you think about the practice facilities?
Having been at a few clubs throughout Central Ohio now, not membership, but just played, I do think Brookside's actually is quite a bit better as far as practice facilities, but for just like getting better, Columbus Country Club has what you need, right? It's got everything that you would need to hit most shots other than our punch out the draws through the trees that Farr and I are typically hitting.
You got to come to Urbana to work on those shots.
Or Brookside.
Right, exactly. Or Brookside, yeah. But yeah, I think if I had to give them a grade, like B-.
Okay.
I would add some actual like holes that you could play, not like real holes, but I would say like an actual practice hole where you could hit some real shots, and really try to work some things out. The range is fine. It's nothing special. And then, you know, as far as like just like hitting your short shots and kind of practicing around the green, they have enough, but it's not anything special. I feel like I can go to some public courses and get the exact same thing. Like Oakhaven up in Delaware is like, yeah, they have a great practice facility, and I'd say it's even better than CCC's. So, it's fine, and it'll get you where you need to go, right? It's a Honda, you know, not a Cadillac or a
shots fired
or anything
shots
like that.
We're probably going to.
I don't know.
I agree. I agree with a lot of it. Yeah.
Matt Farr and I were probably going to the same place, but I think the one thing that you're not giving it credit for that I think it deserves credit for that I've never played is that there's a par 3 course on site.
Yes, thank you. We don't want to disrespect the par 3.
I was going to ask if you've played it.
That's a good point. No, I haven't yet. Okay. I haven't yet.
Would you consider the par 3?
I guess you could consider those. You could consider those kind of like the practice holes, right, I suppose. Yeah. Okay. So
That's where my head went, that – you know, if you wanted to work on, you know, wedge game and chipping and putting, like, you know, that feels like I've never played it, but it feels like a great option to have out there.
Very true.
Certainly
That's
for the kids,
point.
Too.
That's a good point.
I'll echo.
I'll
Tommy's
bump it up
echo.
To B+.
Something that I think is underrated is it's a very short walk from where you park your car to where you hit golf balls at the driving range. And
I love that aspect.
I love that. There's nothing worse. Agreed. I mean, this is a really nice club. If you pull up, they'll valet your car, I'm sure. But if you're just an average dude like the four of us are, you just park your own car, open up the trunk, and head to the range. And so when you have to walk 15 steps, that's pretty nice. And they also do have mats. So I don't like hitting off mats, but I would think that if I was a member, I would appreciate having the mats.
What's
walkability for the course is great as a whole too. Not to move on to the next topic, but I'm just saying, like, I think they've set that up really well. So, like, not just the practice facilities, but also just the whole course is super walkable.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially when you talk about, like, the practice green and how that just leads right in then to the first tee.
Yep, it's like a perfect walk. It's so good.
And then you loop around and on four, the tee box, blending in with the
If we're giving the practice facilities a B overall, then the range is a C and the putting green's an A. Because the putting green is elite.
It's sick.
Yeah. I mean, the flags
it's really nice.
On the putting green are awesome.
Dope.
Awesome.
They've got the small holes in the putting green, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, if you include the par 3 course as, like, kind of the practice, then, like, it's a solid.
Do we have a grade facility. Reversal here?
Sounding like it.
We get an upgrade here.
Tommy is kind of changing influencing my mind things. In that, like, yeah, it's a valid point that you can work on everything you need to work on.
Presenting new evidence to the case.
But I would say also it depends if there's people behind you or whatever. Right. Like how much you're getting pushed, how much you can actually work on stuff, or if people are, if there's no one, then you can do as much as you want. So. But yeah, valid points, Tommy.
For somebody with limited golf knowledge, what's the value that the mats have? Because I, like you, don't like hitting off of them, but I assumed they were just there to preserve the range box.
Yeah, if you
for hacks
got,
like me.
Well, I don't think it's really range protection as much as it is availability in more conditions. Because if the range or the pro shop thinks that the balls aren't going to plug out in the range and they can actually pick them, they'll have you hit off the mats instead of taking pelts on the great range grass. Or if the super has to, you know, plant some seed and he doesn't want to have people walking or trampling the grass out where they're replanting grass, then you can still hit balls even if the conditions are great, right? I mean, am I missing anything there?
No, I mean, the only thing I was going to add was it is a little bit of protection this time of year. You know, towards the end of the season when, you know, certainly out of Brookside right now, it's only off of mats as they're trying to, you know, let the grass heal, let the turf heal before, you know, kind of the frost sets in and, you know, starts the growth process over in the spring, just to have it, you know, the range in a great spot come the start of the season next year.
Makes sense. Yeah. I mean, I hit so many great shots off mats, but then when I'm on the range or on the course with real grass, I realize that six inches behind the ball is not
just
what you want.
Just carry a little mat with you and just plop your ball on it.
I've got good bounce on the 5-iron.
Absolutely.
Really good bounce.
I think the go ahead, Dave.
No, sorry. I unfortunate timing due to the wife being out of town and me on double kid duty. I have to move on. But yeah, love you boys.
Dave, can we get a real quick? We'll move into this, but can we get a real quick favorite hole?
What's up?
Yeah.
Favorite hole. And I'm trying. So I think it's number 15, 14 into 15. Tommy, you remember the hole that you and Matt, the hole you just blasted drives and didn't realize that it was
our balls.
Basically go into
That's 14.
That's a sweet hole.
14. Yeah, I love 14 into 15. I just think it's so like unique the way that the green and the kind of the fringe flows into the next tee box. I just think it's just so really, and it's a really cool view of the rest of the course as it kind of goes down in that valley close to the river. Man, I think that's probably my favorite two holes, really. You know, that
is that the one with the villas like up on the left? You're going up the hill and the villas up to the left?
Yep.
All right. Hey.
Wouldn't want to live there. Definitely could get peppered with some golf balls. But
sorry, that's why you haven't.
Anyways, yeah, there you go. All right. Well, thanks, fellas, and we'll see you. We'll see you next time.
All right. See you tomorrow, dude.
Cheers, right. Buddy.
Have fun, man.
All right. So,
how about that? First time caller.
Absolutely. Yeah. Long time listener. The other thing I was going to say about the putting green, just talking about the practice facilities, when you walk onto the putting green at Columbus Country Club, it feels like you should be a good golfer. You know, you get the feel of like the greens are really fast. They flow almost into the very first tee where you tee off with a pretty sweet view. And you just feel like, I'm going to play well today. I mean, that changes really quickly, you know, based
when
on
you're in that bunker.
When you're in that bunker off number one fairway. But that's the feeling I get on the putting green.
No, nobody should hit it in that bunker off of number one fairway. I'm just saying there's infinite room to the right.
Tommy, where were you the last
time? I was
time?
In the bunker on the left side of the fairway.
Okay.
Do as I say, not as I do.
Yeah.
I was right there with you. So that's how I knew. Yeah,
tough spot to be.
Yeah, but I agree. But that you're right, Matt. That view.
Great.
Yeah. You're just kind of like looking over sort of into that valley. You're just like, yeah, we're going to rip it and go.
You're trapped in the city until you step on that first tee box. And it's like, oh, this is sweet. Yeah. So what do we think before we have the proverbial tee off here? What do we think of the clubhouse? We've got the Columbus Country Club is a little bit unique because we've got the pro shop and sort of the bag room with the caddy shack.
Yep.
But then we've also got the clubhouse where you would eat, shower, have the whole men's grill and locker room experience.
Yeah, I was gonna say the pro shop and that, you know, fairly nondescript. Now, you know, going inside the pro shop, a lot
sweet
of stuff.
Stuff.
I have to call out the alternate logo of Columbus Country Club, red-tailed hawk. Very simple, but incredible.
Absolutely.
If we're out there tomorrow, I likely am buying something with that logo on it. But anyway, but the clubhouse itself, I mean the big columns there on the backside, looking back out over on the golf course with the different levels of the patio with tables where you can eat, have a drink, watch people come in. Like I think it's a great spot to hang out and sit. And you know, as you're coming up 8 and coming up 18, you know, it's a cool look to see kind of those big columns and the look there coming up the fairway.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's what you're looking for when you're finishing a round in terms of just kicking back and relaxing and enjoying a drink or if you want a bite to eat or a snack or something. I can't say I've spent a lot of time inside, so I don't have a good comparison.
Same.
So I just solely basing it off of what they have to offer, where when you get there, you're eager to go play or start your warm-up. The shack is perfect. No frills, get you where you need to be and get you onto the course quickly.
Yeah.
And then, boom, you can sit down, you can be outside, and you can enjoy, and you've got a pretty decent view no matter where you're sitting out there. So I think it's fine. And the grill, it's an enough size, and it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Leads right into the locker room.
The patio calls your name.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you finish the round, you walk up, and you just kind of look to the left as the parking lot. Then you look to the right, and there's this patio, and you're like, hey, you know, we should probably go sit out there and do something, right?
And those garage, like the bar, the access to the small sidebar without needing to go inside is clutch.
Yeah.
Because a cold beer is quick and easy to pour and you don't got to wait too long. And they've got folks that are there, you know, running around doing the service thing. But if you wanted to go grab it yourself, you're fine. Mm-hmm. More of the fancy dark liquor hanging out in the nice bar. And they've got a pretty good selection there too. We've found some really good stuff at straight
reasonable prices.
We've enjoyed a couple as well. And we've reimbursed Dave as well.
But I think I still owe Dave money for something at some point. So good thing he's off the call now. He won't remember.
That's right. Until tomorrow.
It's an awesome spot.
All right. So let's get into the golf course. So we mentioned the view on the first hole. I mean, let's kind of lump the first three holes together. Let's break this into sections. What do we think of the first three holes to give a description? You're teeing off from an elevated tee. First hole is a dogleg left. First shot, very downhill. Second shot, very uphill. So, what do we think about, like, kind of heading into the valley, I think of it as?
Yeah, I mean, when we talk about favorite holes, I mean, that 1-2-3 stretch was
sweet.
Certainly
awesome.
On my list.
Yes.
You know, just like you said, just the views, having those elevated tee shots and being able to, you know, really take in that whole 1-2-3 valley, you know, standing on number one tee, standing on number two tee, which is also perched up high, hitting a downhill shot. And then, you know, number three is kind of an interesting beast in and of itself.
We'll discuss we'll number get three there. Green, you know?
Yeah, but, you know.
I've never been on it, so I don't know.
But, you know, from a first, you know, first two holes standpoint, you know, one, I think, you know, kind of by design, it, I would say the tee shot's probably, you know, not the most challenging tee shot you're going to face all day. Certainly, you know, given the amount of room right, you know, as we alluded to earlier, didn't take advantage of that. But, you know, that happens. But the second shot's certainly demanding.
Yeah, absolutely.
Up the hill to a very challenging green, large green at that.
It gives me a false sense of hope. It looks wide open.
That's such a great phrase.
Yep. Let me snag the driver. Let's go. Because you're right. I don't think anybody should be in that bunker. And if you can't control it enough, then just drop down the three-way and you'll be fine to take it out of play.
Because it's not a long hole.
No.
You don't have to bang driver.
If you're hitting three-wood, yeah, you're fine. You should be fine. And but driver makes that fairway bunker play or in reach and in play. And you see this vast openness, and you're just like, yeah, I mean, I'm not going to hit that tiny little thing out in all of that space. And I think the last two times I've been in that bunker, it's like, dang.
But I think that, you know, a little bit of a golf course nerd, but I think that's part of kind of a Donald Ross design golf course, is that opening tee shot is not meant to be like the most challenging tee shot you're going to hit all day. I think most of his designs, it's meant to kind of ease you into the round a little bit. You know, I think of that. I think of number one at Inverness, it's pretty wide open. You know, the list could go, you know, on and on. I know I've played a ton of Donald Ross courses over the years, but I think that's one of kind of the hallmarks of his design philosophy.
Played like a Southern Pines, I think,
Pinehurst. Yep.
And I remember hitting maybe a driving iron or a four iron off the first tee, and it was like, hey, this is a nice handshake to open the round. But the other part of that is when these bunkers that you don't think are in play or these holes that aren't that long, you know, when they start to rear their heads, then you know it's a pretty well-designed golf hole because these first three holes are not long. I mean, I think I hit driving iron off of one, and we might have hit driving irons, hybrids, three woods off of two. Three, it's essentially pick your club, get the ball in the fairway.
Yep.
You've got to hit the fairway on three. And all three holes, I'd say if you played them, if I played them even par, I'm feeling really good about the start of my round. Very good. But I don't know. I mean, what's your par on the first three holes? One over? Two over? You know, 22? Dave was like 200 net, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We can leave him out of that.
Yeah, so I'm glad he's not on the call anymore.
He was on fire. Yeah. Especially after his drive on two. Oh, that was awful. Smack in the middle of the fairway. Yeah, probably. You know, one to two over.
Yeah.
For me, my par. But the I think it's the beauty of the first three holes is it's not overly complicated, but if you find yourself in some tricky situations, it's still manageable, but it's just like, ah, man, what could have been? Yeah. And three, you definitely want to be on the right side.
Absolutely.
Right? And they've got a really cool green. So I think this is where we're headed to.
Yeah.
Talking a little bit about three green.
Yeah, when we need to address it.
When you walk off the practice putting green and you're heading up to the tee box on one, you can kind of see the green because it's slightly below where the first tee box is. But as you navigate your way to your approach shot on three, it's pretty significantly uphill.
Yeah.
And it's a blind green, right?
Yeah.
You can't see the green, really. It's long, and it's got a slope. Is it sloping? It's sloping towards.
Significantly back to front.
Right. Yeah. Right. Donald Ross signature here.
And it's awesome. But I've just never found the darn green. It stinks. I think it's cool. Well, it's a challenge, but I've never hit my approach shot.
The green.
Oh, yeah.
You're in trouble.
You're on the hill. You're in
the
heather.
If you hit the green, you're potentially in trouble.
It is not the old adage of hitting it pin high on that green. It is, you know,
pin high is no good.
You hit it pin high 10 feet, you're playing 3 feet a break at least.
Yeah. To give you some credit, you're saying you didn't find the green. I mean, you can chip the ball and it can be at a trickle and you're going to find yourself chipping on the other side of the green potentially. Yeah. It's so fast.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, what do you know, we don't want to be the stimp meter guys, but it was pretty quick the day that we played it. So I don't know what their tournament conditions would be for like a club championship type round, but that could get pretty dangerous. I mean, I hope it's a match play situation so guys can just pick up and move to the next hole if they're going to make a 7 or an 8 on a match play.
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, like you said, not a long hole. Got to hit the fairway. But you think about hitting a severely uphill second shot into that green. Probably helpful. I mean, if you're hitting it flat to downhill and you're hitting, you got a wedge in your hand, there's zero chance you keep the ball on that green.
Yeah, true, because of spin.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and this is the beauty. Like we said, they took out so many trees. This is the beauty of lack of trees. Yeah. Is on the first tee box, you can see that green. So it's just already giving, it's teasing you with what's coming what's your way.
Yep.
But if you've never played the course, then you just say, oh, this looks like a nice big green to hit. You know, they don't tell you that it's a narrow fairway and a steep walk up the hill and, you know, danger awaits as soon as you pull out the putter on the green.
If you do play it for the first time, make sure you take a quick peek over to your right as you're standing on one tee.
Yeah.
And just take a look at where that flag stick
is. Just get a gander.
Yep.
Yeah.
As a younger in my golf professional career, that was one of the things that a friend mentor of mine had taught. We were playing a links style course. Just every time you get a chance to see a green, let's go. Let's take a look at it. Mm-hmm. Let's see what's going on with it.
Hole 4. Pretty long par 4. I mean, we've got 3 par 4s in a row, right? 4, 5, and 6. And this stretch can be scoreable or very dangerous as well. These holes I considered after we played them, wow, those 3 holes are really fair, but they're one bad swing away from just biting you. So I feel like everyone had a shot on each of those 3 holes that got them in trouble. And it would just surprise me because all 3 holes are not that they're nothing that you're going to remember, I think, as your favorite hole, 4, 5, and 6.
No, I mean, I was going to say the only thing you might remember is kind of the kind of bluff on 5 off to the right.
Which comes into play pretty quick.
It does. But, yeah, I mean, as I was jotting down favorite holes, you know, I kind of breezed through 4, 5, and 6. I mean, they're good, you know, good fair par 4s, like you said. But, you know, good bunkering, good greens, nothing wrong with them. But, you know, if 18 holes are your favorite hole, you don't really have a favorite hole. So,
absolutely. Far, what do you think? 4, 5, and 6.
Not a lot to offer that you guys haven't said. The tee box on 4 is awesome, I think, just because you peek behind you and you got the practice green.
The back tee box that we don't play.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But this is why I said the practice green is so awesome, is you're sitting there hitting putts on the practice green. You can get a little bit of a glimpse of number 3 green, number 1 tee, and number 4 tee.
Yeah.
And it's almost like the practice green puts you on the golf course without being on the golf course yet.
Right.
So
you feel like you're inside the ropes.
Yeah. Yeah. And we did play the tips last year, and we played that tee box on 4, and it's sweet.
We did.
And you're 10 feet away from the putting green, so you're going to have a little gallery to hit that tee shot if some guys are warming up, getting ready to hit the ball,
and you're not far from the eyesight of those guys sitting on the patio having a cocktail after the round. So
absolutely, yeah. Hole 7.
Another tough green.
Is number 7's green harder or easier than number 3's green?
Never been on 3. Can't tell you.
I don't know the ant, but, I mean, it feels like it's pitched almost as severely as number 3. But, like we talked about, you're coming in at a flatter angle. And so, you know, you're hitting, you know, shorter irons and...
Yeah, what, 9 irons, 8 irons, so, maybe? Yeah.
But, you've really got to be able to control, you know, flight, control spin in order to put yourself in a spot where you've got a good look at it. I mean... If you're pin high on the other side of the green, I mean
it's
that's 4 puttable.
Exactly.
Like it's nuts. Yeah. But again, it just goes to, you know, you've really got to play it backwards and know where you need to be and know the spot where you want to hit it and where you can miss.
That's a good point, because if that pin's front, that's tough. Especially
tough.
Looking at the picture of not remembering where those bunkers are, they're.
And those bunkers are deep, if I remember correctly.
Right there.
They're not like your little shallow pitch it out, spin it out of the bunker type shot.
Deep, flat bottom, flat bottoms and yeah. big faces on them.
Yeah.
Flat bottom girl.
All right.
Number eight. So this is the thing that I think makes Columbus Country Club a little bit difficult and unique. Yeah, because we've played seven holes and we haven't had a par five yet. So finally, if you get beat up on the first seven holes, you're looking at the scorecard and you're cheering because you're like, oh man, finally. But then you get a pretty narrow tee shot for this par five, but it's not long. I mean, this hole is not long. So, but this is just what makes it challenging is if you have not driven the ball well on holes one through seven, you probably don't have that great of a score yet on your scorecard.
Yep.
And number eight is sort of like, I always think of it as it's the time to put the pedal down further on this round or please, you know, Jesus grab the wheel kind of situation. Like, please get the ball in the fairway on this first par five.
But, yeah, I mean, it's another one that, I mean, another Ross kind of design, you know, strategic bunkering throughout the course.
Yeah.
I mean, that bunker off to the, I think it's off to the right, very easily can find yourself in that bunker.
Just with a great drive.
With a great drive.
Yeah.
Just, I mean, from an architecture standpoint, just well-placed hazards that make you think and make you execute a tee shot in order to, you know, although it's not short, it's not long, but you've really got to execute your tee shot in order to set yourself up to, you know, go at that green in two.
Yeah. And I can only speak for the pin that we played, but I don't remember this green as being a diabolically punishing green. Mm-mm. I feel like this hole is within the tee shot.
Yep.
It just depends on if you hit a great tee shot, you're probably going to go, yeah, I love that eighth hole.
Yeah.
If you drive in that fairway bunker on the right, you're going to say, man, that eighth hole kind of sucks.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And, you know, it's like you have to go for the green. You have to if you hit that fairway.
Yep.
You just rip it up next to the green and try to get the ball up and down.
Yep.
But, yeah. What did you have happen on that hole far? Did you hit the fairway?
You and I were on the right side. We were both in the fairway because you were in the fairway, right?
Yeah.
You passed the bunker.
Yeah, finally.
And I was just a little bit – I think you were past the bunker. I was just shy of the bunker. And I believe I pushed it to the left. If I'm remembering correctly, I think I was doing some remodeling of the greenside rough off to the left of the hole there, getting it on. Probably got it on 50 feet past the pin and had a couple putts.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right.
I can pull up the app.
Oh, you're good. I was gonna say the other unique aspect to it is it's the hole going inward. Like it's the hole that goes back to the clubhouse.
Clubhouse, correct.
The ninth hole goes away from the clubhouse, which is a kind of a unique aspect to the routing and the design of the course, which is interesting but kind of fun.
And like, shout out to the members. It feels like every time I play this hole, you're passing someone who's playing hole number four. And the conversation is always fun.
Yep.
They're always looking at you. If they're in the right rough on four and you're in the right rough on eight or you're in the bunker on eight, you're just kind of looking at each other like, we both know we're not supposed to be here, but it's great to see you on this awesome day to play golf.
Yep.
And everybody's always welcoming you. It makes you feel a little bit better if you've had like a bad drive on either one of those holes to just run into somebody who's got a smile on their face. And occasionally you've got to wait.
Nod of acknowledgement.
Yeah, nod of acknowledgement. Like, hey, you understand what I'm going through here, right? So
par.
Yeah.
Last trip out, par.
Well done.
Fairway hit. No gur.
Yeah.
As much as I want.
That was probably a dangerous. If we were partners there, that was probably dangerous because you were definitely getting a shot.
We're playing Wolf that game?
Yeah, we were playing Wolf.
Yeah.
Yeah. Boy, what a game. Man. What a game.
I can't. Yeah, I don't remember the details. I've got a terrible memory, so just the fact that I was even able to remember that, I'm surprised.
Yeah.
But then also the fact that we were playing Wolf. But, yeah, no, par. Got to give myself a little bit of credit here.
Absolutely.
Decent putting.
So let's lump 9 and 10 together. 9, par 3 going out, as you mentioned.
Yep.
Pretty basic golf hole.
Good golf hole, good bunkering.
Yeah.
Yep.
Kind of cool to have a ninth hole as a par 3.
Yep. Interesting. But, you know, my mind goes to 10.
Absolutely.
I mean, 10, if I had to pick a hole of the whole court, like, that would be my favorite golf hole on the course.
Yeah.
You know, it's a par 5, dogleg right. You know, kind of that bluff we talked about on 5 that you can see, you know, we're working our way on the top of it. So,
which used to be covered by trees.
Correct. You can now see, you know, you can see everything from that, from the fairway. Tough tee shot. But in the green complex is another one that's just kind of wild.
Absolutely.
You know, the slope that's there, and then the runoff areas down kind of the front left part of that green. You know, no easy feat to get it up and down on that hole. But I just think the views and kind of the routing of that it's probably my favorite hole in that golf course.
Big fan of 10.
Also could be because he eagled that hole, but
well,
you know,
that might it have helps. To do with it. It helps.
But I do agree.
The historian leaving out the history.
No.
Burying the lead. What do you think, Farr? This I would say is a tie for me with my favorite hole on the golf course as well. I'm torn between two of them. One of them I did not play well, but I would have to say it's one of my favorite holes.
See, I'm not two.
No,
I would say it'll be 10 and 12.
Yep.
It's 10 and 12.
It's not one of my favorites, but I think my judge of – see, this is where I actually am excited about learning a lot from you guys and how you see courses, how you attack courses, what you like about architecture, what you don't like about architecture, because I'm – like I said, I have no built-up conceptions into my head. So, like, I'm learning as we go. And 10 to me just not really anything that I've thought of as, like, my favorite or a stinker of a hole. Just kind of like, yeah, let's go try to get a birdie here if we can.
I think the reason, and maybe we're speaking for too many people here, Tommy, but I think the reason you'll find a lot of people are going to like hole 10 is because it presents you with multiple risk-reward challenges. If you are going to hit driver on 10, regardless of the tee box, you have to hit almost a fairway within a fairway. You cannot blow the ball to the left just because it looks like it's going down the middle of the fairway. Right. You're going to be in the heather, and you're going to be where they removed all those trees from. So you have to take it down the right-hand side.
Yep.
But then the second shot, even if you execute the tee shot, now you've got this funky green where you're going to get this big bounce when the ball comes in, right? I mean, your ball is probably going to go to the back or to the left side of the green based on the green sloping hard right to left. And so you have to play a shot that fits the type of bounce you could get.
Okay.
And you also have to think, okay, like it's 230 or let's just say it's 250 yards, but you might hit 4-iron.
That's what I was going to say. We're not talking 7-iron into the screen.
No,
we're talking
no.
4-5-6 if you really kill it, but
yeah.
Like long iron.
Well, this is a perfect example. Remember, you and I partnered up on this hole.
You're welcome.
Of course.
Yeah, you're welcome.
I got lucky and had the right partner again in the game of Wolf, but we both hit what I thought were very good shots into the green.
Yep.
And we get up there and Tommy has an eagle putt and we had to search for my ball and it went through the green, through the back. So call that the rub of the green if you want, but I like that fact because they're not just giving you, like some par fives say, if you execute this tee shot, you don't have to hit an elite golf shot on your second shot to get an eagle chance. I think on number 10, you have to hit a pretty elite golf shot or you need a little bit of luck on your bounce. And I like that.
I was going to say, you need to make an eagle. I mean, you need three elite shots.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, you talked about, you know, having an eagle putt from, I don't remember, 10, 12 feet, whatever it was. But that, I mean, that thing turned another, it was another one of these. It was a downhill side-winding putt that, you know, you had to play 4 feet a break and judge the pace and match the line and the speed up. So, you know, in order to really make a low number on that, I mean, you need to string three really good golf shots together.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
I think we're coming up on my couple favorite holes.
Okay. All right.
And I think they're back to back here. I mean, the first three are awesome, but we get to 11 and 12.
Cool spot on the golf course.
Yeah, a really cool spot on the golf course. You're spot on. It's hard to put into words what you're seeing and kind of also what's going into my mind as a novice. But is it 11? Yeah, 11's got that elevated tee box, and it's got that slight bend to the right.
Yep.
Snack shack.
Last time we played.
Well-placed snack shack, by the way.
Absolutely.
The access.
Got to wait an extra
the
hole.
The number of holes that you get to that snack shack is
and
very impressive.
If you passed up an opportunity to snack something, you still have kind of an opportunity when you're slooping back around off the green up there.
Absolutely.
But the views, beautiful. The course is – it's the slight bend to the right on 11. You can there's no reason not to take a driver, in my opinion. It's kind of like, yeah, like the, it's, the risk is low. For golfers like me that maybe struggle controlling their driver, which there are times when I'm fine and there are times when I'm at all over the course.
Yeah, I didn't like think last the sixth time. Hole came into play off of hole 11, but
which hole?
It can. Yeah.
It can. Did that day.
And six is not like slightly off to the left. Six is just extremely far left. And I've definitely found myself over there. I followed it up with a roped 3-wood.
So. Yeah, an insanely good 3-wood.
Yeah. Pulled that one.
I think he was my partner on
my bag of tricks.
Probably.
I was probably picking partners. That's why you were with me.
You seem to end up with I don't know how it happened, but you seem to end up with all the best partners.
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
And so I
get picked.
I like that just because of the views. I like 11 because of the views. 12 comes into my mind as like a really cool hole because of the challenge from the tee box. And you can, if you want to, you can try to go for it. Even guys like me.
Hit it in the heather, you could say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Guys like me.
Yeah, like
and
me.
And if not, there's like a bailout spot to the left. And I'll let you guys kind of describe the course and the structure. But to me, it's really cool because you can play that. I could play that one hole 100 different times and probably play it 100 different ways.
I think on hole 12, this is my other favorite hole on the course. But I think on hole 12, we've got to present what it used to look like, which is tons of trees down the right-hand side. Mm-hmm. And you could barely – I'm not even sure if you could see the green previously, but there were tons of trees down the right. It was always a short par four, and I remember.
But you're almost four. I mean, big dog leg right, but yeah, you were almost forced to hit it out to the left and play it around the dog leg.
And I think when we play there tomorrow, I think I'm going to hit iron off the tee because I keep hitting driver, and it's such a beautiful golf hole that it just entices someone like myself to just try and nuke a driver at the green and just make an easy two or three. And I've yet to make a birdie on that hole hitting driver off the tee. And Dave hit. He was the only one to lay
hybrid,
the ball up,
the hybrid,
and he hits it right down the middle of the fairway and is in perfect position to just hit a sand wedge onto the green. And I just remember looking for my golf ball in the heather, being envious of where he was. And I think that's the third or fourth time I've hit in that right heather. So now it's just a mental game. It's in my head. I'm going to have to hit driving iron.
I'm right there with you. It's funny you mentioned that. I wrote in my notes, 12 also on my list of favorite holes, but I wrote in my notes, always one you want to try and drive. But I feel like I end up in the junk more often than not.
Yeah.
So same idea there.
Yeah. Do you guys have a memory of a drive that was findable on the green and in the fairway?
No.
I've hit one. I've hit the green one time.
I'm 3 for 3 into the heather.
But more often than not, it is right of the green in the heather.
Yeah. I think all three of us were in the heather. Only you guys were up near pin high, and I was slightly back a bit and mishit. But
so.
I love that golf hole, though,
too.
Because that's what tree removal does, is when the golf course architect shows you more of the golf hole.
Yeah.
Now,
good call.
You feel very confident. Oh, I can see what's in front of me. And look, the scorecard tells me it's within reach. And no one tells you that heather that looks like it's 15 yards wide, it's 50 yards wide. I pulled it way right, and I thought, if there's ever a drive that's going to be on the hole that runs side by side with this hole, it's going to be that one. No, it's still in the heather. Yeah, we're still getting ticks on the legs and looking for the golf ball, but I got to get the ball in the fairway there. It's just too fun of a golf hole, and hitting it in the heather just ruins the hole for you.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't mean to whine, but it's like when you're looking for your ball in the heather, you're thinking, golly, I love this hole. Why couldn't I have just hit in the fairway and just hit my wedge on the green and just enjoyed the experience? Well,
this is one of those golf holes that if you're playing in a competition and you're playing with four buddies on a Saturday afternoon, vastly different ways to play it.
Absolutely.
If you and I are playing the Ohio two-man best ball, one of us is taking iron out and hitting it in the fairway.
Yeah, and then you're hitting
and
driver.
And then somebody's hitting driver at the green. But like you said, if you're just four guys, just kind of hanging out on a Saturday afternoon, like how fun is it to try and hit driver at that green and try and drive it, despite the fact that, we're, I don't know, what are we, 1 for 6 in getting it remotely close to the green? The odds are not high.
Also an odd hole, given you both, like, we must be the only golf podcast with two lefties, but you're both lefties.
Yeah.
That's true.
That's part of the problem.
And the
heathers, this hole really invites a left-handed golfer.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You're like, it's off to the crap's off to the right?
Yeah.
Cool.
it certainly plays into the fact that both my favorite holes are number 10 and number 12, which are both dog legs, right?
Yep.
So, yeah. So hole 13 is a pretty, honestly, if you have hit a poor tee shot on 11 and 12, hole 13 is like what you're looking for. It's just a short par three.
It's my favorite par three on the golf course. Yeah, actually,
it's my favorite par three as well.
It's not long. It's, you know, you've got a wedge in hand. It's
kind of uphill,
but it's kind of down through the hollow there. You're still kind of down in the valley. You haven't worked your way back up to the top of the ridge. Good bunkering. It's just a good shortish par three, and you know, I really enjoy playing it.
Yeah, I agree.
Hole 14, a little bit of controversy here. This is where playing the course for the first time, or if you haven't played the course for a long time, it can make a difference. It's a great golf hole, and I say that losing my drive
right
to the left. But
it's got to be right of the tree on the left.
Yeah, but great course design.
Great course
because
design.
The tee box sets you up to hit it towards the left side. The tree. And it's uphill. It's a semi-blind?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, you can't see the fairway up top.
Yeah, and I feel like you roped a drive.
He did. I picked him as my partner because he roped a drive.
Yeah.
He was getting a shot or two. Yeah. I can't remember.
Two popping. And I think my partner made it 4 for 3.
He did.
On this hole.
Correct. That was Dave.
Which was Dave. So.
Another net birdie for Dave.
I believe I got picked again. I wish I could take credit for these captain decisions.
You did not get picked.
Oh, I picked him. I got stuck with
you
him.
You did not. I had the choice. And after Matt Farr roped his tee shot down the middle of the fairway with two pops, I said, partner.
Yeah. I think I did the old quick tee pickup on this one.
You
and
did.
And then we got up there and found out this is not good.
And we both hit it in the heather by the tree.
My ball is
still
there.
Only one popping to correct the record. I was only one popping.
Okay.
Because, I bogeyed the hole, but
probably
couldn't compete with Dave's.
What did you think of this hole, Farr? Because this would be my runner-up. If 10 and 12 are a tie for my favorite golf hole, this one, 14, is my runner-up.
I've always commended you two for your knowledge of being able to play the game and to – like, I'm not the guy that has to finish walking off of a green and, like, look back at the hole and count my score. Like, I'm better than that. But you guys can walk off a green and know what everybody else's score on the whole course was that hole. So you guys have clearly played a lot more golf than I have. I'm not necessarily paying attention to what everybody else is doing. It takes me a lot to go remember things.
You're locked in.
I'm saying this to say that I'm gonna put all of my focus into remembering what 14 was like, because I clearly have no memory of 14 last time we played. I can remember certain aspects of the rounds. Like, I remember other things that we've talked about prior and what we're going to lead up to in other holes, but this one has escaped my memory. So
I think I have a tendency to remember the green complexes for where they could put the pin. And if I remember this green, there are three tiers to this green. Isn't there like a short, a back, and a left tier?
Yeah, I think you're right.
Okay, because
where was this one?
I think this one was short. I think Dave hit it, and it's sort of a bowl in the beginning. Yeah. And so this is kind of a dangerous handicap hole, because if you get a decent second shot and the pin's low, now all of a sudden somebody's got a pretty easy putt for a really good score. But if they had a left pin over top of the front greenside bunker, that would be very, very tough, even if you hit the fairway.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's a very small landing area. So they did a great job. I'm not sure how many trees they removed on the left-hand side so that you can sort of see those condos now. And,
significant, I think.
And you get the heather that's fully in play based on my golf ball still being there today. But
somebody's picked that up and is now playing with it.
Yeah, that's probably true. 15 gets a little bit of credit. I like to call out great tee boxes from the tips. And this one's awesome because you walk right off the green, and I think it runs directly into the back tee box.
That's correct. This is what Dave was describing earlier. This is his favorite part of the golf course.
Yeah.
This is when
he got the angriest.
He picked 14, right? He picked 14.
He picked specifically the
14 into 15.
14 into 15 and the visuals and that. Despite the fact that I think there's other holes on the course where there's runoff areas into tee boxes.
Yeah.
But the views are hard to argue with there up at the top of that hill, being able to kind of see all throughout the property.
Very important point here. Last chance at the snack shack.
Correct.
So, yeah. This is what you were alluding to earlier, as far as you can kind of go in, grab a second hot dog if you feel like it.
So, 13 is the one that has kind of the rock quarry off to the right, correct?
13's the little par 3.
Oh, so 12 has the rock quarry then off to the right.
Yeah.
Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
But
you get a long par 5.
I was going to say another good par 5.
This
another
one's legit.
Demanding
yeah.
tee shot, good fairway bunkering. But you hit a good tee shot and you've got a long second to a fairly challenging green.
Absolutely. I was going to say your job is not done if you hit the number 8. Your job's not done, but you can hit a mediocre second shot yep. and still probably make a 4 if you're a good player.
Yep.
Number 15, I mean, you kind of need to lock in. You either need to hit a really good second golf shot or you're going to have to hit a really good chip shot or pitch shot on your third
yep.
to get the ball around the hole.
For
this
sure.
is a challenging green.
It's one you've definitely got to take notice of where the pin is and make sure, you know, you're conscious of it and – you know, you're not short-siding yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
Par, fairway, green and red.
Whew.
2-putt.
Bravo.
Whoever was your partner in that hole was a happy man.
No,
it's probably you.
No memory of it.
No memory.
Probably my best hole around.
Probably the best hole.
Zero memory of it.
Yeah. 16, 17, 18. Not to lump them together, but this is kind of your final. You make a giant L, right? You go out one more time on 16.
Yep.
And then you play a very long 17th par 3. And then a pretty cool 18th hole.
Can
what do we think about the finish?
16's a good par 4. You know, it's another one of those that, you know, good hole, but not
challenging
a whole lot
green.
To, yeah, not a whole lot to, you know, specifically call out. 17, very difficult, long par 3. Matt Farr, I think you should probably take 17 and let us know what you made there.
Triple.
That's not correct.
Maybe the first time.
I believe it was a net 1.
Yeah.
It was a 2 pop and
so just
I didn't hit the green.
Just to interrupt your story for a second, this is how long this par 3 is you're getting 2 shots.
Correct.
On a par 3.
First. This is how long and how challenging a par 3 this is.
Yeah, I'm going to – we'll save the surprise for the end. Yeah, I hung 3. Everybody knows what I'm going to get then, but didn't hit the green. So it was looking rough to start, right?
But you're right in front of the green.
I'm short. Yeah.
You're right in front of the green to a front pin.
Walking in to pick up the ball out of the hole for my first ever hole-in-one. Net hole-in-one.
Net hole-in-one.
That's what counts.
Sounds like a CPG hat logo
does.
Idea.
Net,
you know,
one.
Net one. Yeah.
Net one.
Yeah.
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 If he made one, I'd probably buy
Absolutely.
More poles.
Yeah. And when we played hole 18, did it take us over or under 30 minutes to play hole 18?
If it took us over, it was my fault.
Oh, gosh. Well,
as I chopped my way up the
you
up
had
the
help.
It was you and me. Yeah
you had help.
We were search committees over there off to the left.
I will say that's one of the better scrambling pars I've ever made in my life.
Yeah,
absolutely.
After finding my ball left of the cart path and trying to hit a punch shot and hitting a tree, and then essentially finding myself on the cart path.
Right down the
and
cart path.
Hitting the best hybrid punch shot I think I've ever hit in my life that flew on within the bounds of the cart path all the way down the hole, took one skip through the trees, and was probably 15 yards short of the green and got that sucker up and down for par. Felt good. Felt like a good way to end the round.
It's never been a more Tommy Harmon.
It was awesome.
Par 5.
It was sick.
He's out of the hole. He's out of the hole. He's out of the hole. How did he make 5?
Hey, what are you going to do?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think I own real estate in that right bunker off the fairway.
Yeah.
That's where I always drive.
It's a tough tee shot.
But yeah, exactly, that's what I was going to say. It's like, it's a par 5, and you look at the scorecard, and you go, oh, thank goodness, we get to finish on a par 5. And then you go, hey, it's kind of in course, out of bounds to the left, because there's the driving range
yep.
/ practice facility. And oh, by the way, to the right, you've got the option to hit in the bunker or the rough or further right to the heather. So you really have to hit a good tee shot, but... this is another one. If you could get the ball in the fairway, you can have some fun on this hole.
Oh, yeah.
So, and then the 18th hole, when you're on the green, now you're starting to get a view of everything that could happen after the round, right? You're
yep.
like, hey, you know, parking lot left, patio right, and obviously we've chosen the patio right every time.
Many times.
So, yeah. Many times. All right, so scale of 1 to 10, what would we give this golf course? A 10 is I'm going to pretty much do everything to go play this golf course. I will hop on a plane. I'll take the invite. I'll go play in cold weather kind of thing. So where are we at on a scale of 1 to amazing, if you will?
It's a fun golf course. It's a really good solid track. I mean, I don't know. It's hard to, I don't want to set the bar on our 1 to 10 scale here for golf courses.
It's okay.
But you know, it's hard. It would be hard for me to give it much, you know, much less than a 7. I don't know.
Yeah.
Where are you guys at?
Are we just doing whole number scales? What's the, sorry to be the dork that has to ask that question.
No, we can go half numbers.
You know, you got to define what a half number is.
Yeah, we're not going tenths of a number here. Half and whole.
I didn't want to. It's a great course. That's why, because I think it does deserve the credit for being an awesome course. Factored in, like, would I go fly to it and all that fun stuff? I mean, I'd fly to Columbus because Columbus is home, but. I like you, Tommy, I was actually leaning towards a 7 as well. And if we did go halvesies, I may bump it up to a 7.5. But
that's where I'm at.
It's right there for me because it's a lot of fun. You can go – if you want it to be a quick round, you can go make it a quick round. And if you want to go enjoy the time with the fellows, you can have a good time. So
we didn't talk about walkability, but that's always going to give the edge to a course. So if I had to choose between a 7 and a 7.5 – because it's very, very walkable and it's got a lot of history and it's got those little things like the super cool flags that are in the state of Ohio flag cutout shape. Those things push it up to like a 7.5 for me. Yeah. I'm probably not hopping on a plane, but I'm very, very happy leaving the golf course. Kind of feeling like I stole a day at somewhere where I maybe didn't belong. That's how I leave Columbus Country Club feeling, especially after walking.
Yeah. Certainly. If somebody, you know, if somebody calls and offers you, you know, says, hey, you want to come play Columbus Country Club and you have nothing else going on? Yeah. I'm there.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. I'd cancel some meetings for it, for sure.
That's fair.
So, all right. So maybe we can start the bourbon portion here. But Tommy selected
I already took a sip
for us to taste tonight. There's really no rules to our bourbon tasting, but if you've waited this long for the bourbon tasting opinion, right, then we apologize. But we're golf junkies first.
Hopefully we can make this kind of a, you know, continuing segment. But you know, picking something from, you know, the significant bottles of bourbon that we discussed at the beginning, you know, trying to find, you know, something that's, you know, fun or whatever. You know, I think this is one of the more recent bottles I've picked up. And I don't know that either of you have, I would guess neither of you have ever tried it. So I'm interested to hear what you think.
Did you pick it up in Ohio or did you get it online? Not to incriminate yourself, but did you buy it on?
A friend picked it up for me.
Good call. Good call.
And just so that the listeners know, we've been sipping on Elijah Craig Small Batch to essentially set the palate.
And barrel
right?
proof.
And maybe,
we may have torched the palate.
Maybe some of us with barrel proof. Thanks, Matt Farr.
Yeah.
But for me, the bourbon I really want to taste is always best tasted second. So it's good to have a little bit something pre-game for me.
You got to wake the senses up.
Yeah, you destroyed them with the barrel proof, but that's okay.
All right, so I just woke my senses up.
Yeah. This is immediately smooth, though. First drink. Very smooth. Not a lot of heat.
The nose is sweet to me. It's so sweet. Yep. But the sip is not.
I get a lot of sweetness on the sip.
Yeah, but I'm sorry. It's not.
Or orangey type sweetness.
But it's not it's not as sweet on the taste or on the palate as the nose would suggest to me.
Do you want to throw out any hints?
Do
we want to take a guess on the proof? Maybe we'll take a guess on the proof before providing additional
detail.
Yeah,
let's do.
I'm so bad at guessing proof. That's just because I taste flavors doesn't necessarily mean that it can't be a higher proof.
Correct.
Because I got some good high proofers that I really love.
But that's sort of the complex beauty, though, right?
Yeah,
because
exactly.
If you guess 90 and then it's 110.
I think it's one of the misconceptions that folks have about whiskey in general is just, oh, yeah, it's 125 proof. Oh, all I'm going to taste is the heat.
Right.
It's like, oh, if it's a rye, you might get some spice from the flavors of the rye. If it's, you know, if it's just a high proof that doesn't burn your face off, you might be getting some layers of flavor in there that you – it takes a little bit of time to warm up to. But
for sure. Yeah. I mean, and if it's – listen, if it's a high proof and it's really bad,
oh,
sure.
It's
yeah, you're going
like
to get some heat.
Yeah,
but,
exactly.
Yeah. But I would go not to just – pick a round number that's between everything, but I think that this is really close to 100 would be my guess.
Like a bottled and bond or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I do think that this is a potential bottled and bond. And if I had to guess the over or under,
yep,
I would go over.
How about you, Matt Farr? Proof guess.
Oh, man. Call me crazy. I'm going to say 90.
Wow.
90 to 100.
Wow.
No,
it must be some of that Elijah Craig barrel proof previously.
Third drink,
yeah.
I got just a tiny bit more heat. I got a lot more flavor on the third drink.
This is a cask strength bourbon.
Wow,
it is 118 proof.
Wow, 118. Okay. Dang. I mean, that kudos to that because it's drinkable, man. It's not something that's high proof and. Whew.
So based on 118, is this a different Elijah Craig barrel proof?
This is not a different Elijah Craig barrel proof.
Okay.
This is actually the first bottle I've ever purchased from this brand.
That's tough.
It is tough.
With your bourbon collection. It's very tough.
It is.
Before you reveal it,
yep,
what prompted you to buy the first bottle from this brand? Because that's a buying decision that requires a little bit of conviction.
It probably did not have as much conviction as it should have. It was one that I saw and it sounded interesting. And I was thinking to myself, I've never had anything from this brand. So
bourbon.
This
bourbon
seems good. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I figured I'd give it a rip.
Fourth drink, it got a lot of brown
sugar. That's kind of so. Now I'm trying to like do the, you know, like the guessing game in my head of what I know he has and likes and what he's dabbled in before. To like,
it,
oh, okay,
it is a blend.
What's new to him? What can what
could it be one of Tommy's many Bardstown products?
I was gonna say, yeah, I know he's a Bardstown savant. So
it is not. It is not
a
Bardstown product.
Yeah.
I mean, when you said orange size, I was like, oh, my gosh, you got Bardstown 3, Discovery 3.
It is not a Bardstown product.
No way. Well, so
but he knows I've had
it
that.
Hold on. Let me pull it up.
So while you're pulling that up, Tommy, let's go ahead and give our rating scale. So we do have a bourbon group where we've got more than just the four of us as members. It's great. We've got annual dues. We've got
a bunch of boys.
It's great old time.
Bibles and bourbons.
Not a podcast. Sorry if you're interested in that subject, but.
But
could be.
But if you're interested, smash the like button.
But we do have a rating system, right?
It rolls, 1 to 5.
It rolls 1 to 5. Okay,
one, so complex.
1 to 10 just generated
quarter
too much
points.
Conversation.
Yeah.
And quarter points only. Okay, we're trying to throw tenths of points, eighths of points.
No,
it's too much.
We still need to revise that.
Quarter points. And, you know, essentially, it feels like every time we're playing an over-under game with three.
Correct.
But I don't know if, before we do a reveal, what our rating of this bourbon would be. Once again, blind. I mean, Tommy, do you know or did Erica pour this?
I know.
Okay. All right.
I poured it.
Okay.
I know what it is.
Okay.
So I will abstain from.
Okay. So the two Matts here, we're coming in blind.
I really like it.
I do
flavor-wise, I think it's really good.
I do too.
So if we're going off of our historical scale of points, for me, I think it's like a 4.0. Like I drink this a lot.
I had 3.5 in my mind, but the fact that I guessed that it's 100 proof and it's actually 118 shows me that it's a pretty daggone good bourbon because I'm getting a lot of flavor without a lot of heat,
mm-hmm.
and that's, in my personal novice opinion, a sign of a bourbon that I like. I like a lot of flavor, but sometimes when they get higher proof, you just can lose some of that, right? I mean, the distilleries just... they just come out a certain way. I mean, it just didn't produce the flavor that they wanted, and you really sense like, oh, this is 130. You know, there are Elijah Craig barrel proofs that knock your socks off, and then there are Elijah Craig barrel proofs that are the smoothest thing you'll ever drink. So I love this one, and the fact that it came in smoother than I thought, that gets extra points for me. I would say it's a 4.
Yeah.
If I saw this, I would buy it.
Spot on.
I was a big fan when I opened it up the first time last night and gave it a try before.
That's nice. You let it air out for us a little
bit. I did. Yeah, I did. I didn't want to give you a fresh crack.
The neck pour, yeah, that's always.
But it's a blend of 8-year-old Kentucky, 8-9-year-old Indiana, 8-13-17 and 18-year-old Tennessee.
Hmm. Wow, it's got a lot in there.
This is the
And it's a blend.
It is a blend. This is the Barrel Craft Spirits 10th anniversary blend.
Ooh.
Wow.
I just got down the rabbit hole of looking at a review of this bourbon, and someone called it the second best bottle they've ever purchased. So our ratings are pretty spot on with what I was reading in the Reddit forums.
The anniversary?
This is their 10th. This is the 10th anniversary of Barrel Craft Spirits.
Okay.
Can you still buy this bottle?
No.
I did not think so, because there was an online offering, I think. Or there was I think there was an offering, like there was one friend that could get it for you. Right, and you had to kind of go through that friend within a certain time frame.
That's right.
I think is what it was.
That's right. Yeah.
Good find.
But yeah,
I have friends in high, low places, man.
Well, you know, you've just got to keep your connections open.
Price of the bottle?
I believe it was $89.
Yeah. Barrel is another brand that you see many bottles,
yep.
And I see a wide disparity of reviews between the different bourbons right. that they produce,
different batches,
and they're expensive.
Yep.
You know, expensive is relative based on what your situation is, right? But when you're paying $70 or higher for every single bourbon, it's tough to pull the trigger on a bottle. I mean,
on their normal batch bourbon offerings, I think they're up to batch 35. So right. I mean, they've had a lot
right
in 10 years.
Yeah, and they've got all the different, like, Dovetail and right. Seagrass and everything, like,
and the Gray Label and they've got some really expensive offerings.
And some of them get super high marks. Some Absolutely. Of them do get some, it's okay.
Yes.
The Seagrass, I think, gray. Got one of the best.
Yeah, I think.
Seagrass is a very
popular.
Love it.
People love it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But no, for my first Barrel Craft Spirits product, I'm very happy with it. It's very good.
This is very, very good bourbon.
Yeah, it's phenomenal.
Yeah, yeah. And it's something, you know, we visit Arizona usually once a year. I know Tommy goes out there quite a bit as well. Family connections, don't judge us. But this is everywhere in Arizona all the time. And I look at the price tag and I get blinded by it.
Yeah.
Because I say, well, if I buy this and it's $100 and it's not good, I don't really know. And they've got so many labels and I don't know how to determine which label's good. You know, should I go rye or not rye? Some people are reviewing the rye as their favorite rye ever. And you still say, is it $110 kind of good? So this is encouraging because it probably helps me pull the trigger on actually buying a bottle of something from their brand the mm-hmm. next time I'm in a store. And maybe I should read a couple of reviews on yeah. favorite bottles.
It's good when it gets you – it's tough when they have a ton of offerings because you don't know if you're making the right choice. So like, oh, am I getting the right one, or am I shooting myself in the foot with a bad one that nobody really liked? But then it's like, oh, why am I putting a lot of weight into those folks that say this one sucks or this one's good? Because it's all in your taste. It's all in your profile. And if you find a good reviewer that likes similar things that you do, or even if the person is somebody that you seem to kind of trend towards – always just pull the trigger if they're giving it good reviews and have tried it before you, or just go to your local bar and get yourself a nice pour of it if you've got a spot. I mean, we got some great spots here in Columbus where you can go grab, a plethora of options to go pick a nice pour of and then see if you want to go pull your trigger on that bottle. But
I was told today at SIP they had a Four Roses single barrel strength. For, I think it was an OBSF or an OESF. $7
wow.
for a pour.
Wow.
So go check it out.
That's so good.
It's like 25.
Yeah, I mean, $100 bottle.
Wow.
Go check it out.
That's awesome.
Yeah, our spot in Marysville, if you want the
it's
best.
It's probably gone by now.
It's probably gone by now for sure. Our spot in Marysville, best spot to grab a glass of bourbon is House of Spirits. Hayden, bar manager there, fantastic, genius when it comes to selecting bourbon. He's the only guy that's ever given me a pretty reasonably priced CYPB pour, but some rare stuff on the menu, so. Yeah, it's definitely nice because some of these bottles, like you said, so you can't find this 10th anniversary bottle, but I'm sure if you had a, air quote, friend who you could buy it on the secondary market from, potentially, maybe even get it as a gift, per se, on the secondary market, you know, it's going to cost you a little bit. So if you love it, then it's always great to spend 10, 15, 20 bucks to try it, prior to spending a couple $100.
I mean, knowing that it's $80, which is a $70 savings to my one of my favorites, which is Bardstown Discovery Number 3, which has some similar notes and flavors, I'd buy this all day if I could find it.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
I am ashamed to say that I had this bourbon in the cart of my favorite friend.
Yeah.
And I just didn't, you know, complete the proverbial Venmo transaction, if you will. And so now that I'm giving it a 4 out of 5 and such a strong rating, I'm a little bit regretful of that decision.
Yeah, I was trying to find the how many bottles
were produced.
Bottles were produced.
One.
Because I know it's somewhere. But not finding it immediately.
It's okay.
But it was not a tremendous amount of bottles.
What a find, dude. Thanks
yeah.
for sharing
this. Yeah, fantastic.
Glad you guys enjoyed it.
Absolutely.
Look at us.
Yeah. Getting started.
One.
Yeah, one of one. Hopefully we can get, you know, an audience for this. Hopefully we can get any sort of listener ship.
Our wives won't even listen to this.
Absolutely not. You know, if you're like the four of us, our wives thought this was clearly the worst idea we've ever come up with.
You're
ever.
Just using this as a reason to get together and drink.
Exactly.
Spot on.
Yeah, but I think our next episode, we're going to review Brookside Golf and Country Club.
As we should.
As we should. Courtesy of Tommy Harmon.
One of the best.
And it is one of the best. Another,
he's one of the best.
No. Golf course, not me.
He's one of the best, too.
But golf course has also been recently redesigned, but we'll complete another bourbon review at the end of that one. And hopefully we'll have Dave in person, full-fledged opinion coming in hot from Mr. Lambert, free of child duty.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah.
500 cases, by the way. 3,000 bottles.
Dang.
Okay. So there you go.
It's rare.
So there you go.
If you're searching for it, Bear Bell 10th anniversary bottle, 3,000 available.
Bear Bell or Barrel?
I thought I said Bear Bell, right?
It's Barrel.
Barrel.
I thought it was Bear Bell.
Barrel.
My apologies.
Barrel Craft Spirits.
No wonder I haven't bought it yet. I'm not even familiar enough with the brand. Yeah. Sheesh. No wonder these things are so expensive. You get a weight set. So there you go, Barrel Spirits. There's 3,000 available, and obviously I should not be an owner of one of those 3,000 bottles after mispronouncing the distillery. So
all good. Just giving you a hard time.
Yeah,
man.
Absolutely. That's what we're here for. So
this was fun. I love this.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, man, I hope we make it to – we got to celebrate with some awesome bourbons when we hit, like, milestone eppies, like 100 eppies.
We get 10
like
listeners.
Episode 2.
Oh, yeah, milestone episode 2.
We're past one.
Break out McAllen.
Two,
let's go.
Five,
I think
10.
We should celebrate when we get Dave in here for a full hour.
I think so.
A full hour.
Yeah.
Ooh, we're asking a lot.
We'll see.
If you've stuck around this long, thank you very much. This was the first episode of Pour for the Course. This is Matt Milholland sending us out. And until next time, have a drink, play some golf, enjoy your friendships. See you later.
Neat. Love it.